non-existent sweepstakes, phony lotteries, reverse mortgage schemes, counterfeit drugs. Fraudsters have unlimited imagination when it comes to separating people from their money, especially retirees and the elderly. For some advice on avoiding ripoffs, we turn to retirement expert Tammy Flanagan. Tammy, good to have you back.
Hi, Tom. Good to be back.
This seems to come up around this time of year, summer, and now the home improvement escapades are coming back into town. It seems like they really do prey on the elderly and retirees. And I say those as two separate groups because not everyone retired could be considered elderly.
That's right. Even some elderly folks aren't considered elderly, I think, if you ask them, right? The other thing I think is important to note that because federal employees now have such valuable balances in their TSP accounts, that's another reason why they become prey to scam artists and unscrupulous financial advisors.
How do TSP scams typically work?
Well, luckily, it's rare, so I wouldn't want to worry anybody or dissuade anyone from trying to work with a qualified financial professional, because there's a lot of them out there, and some people do need help with their finances and with tax planning and the like. However, there have been cases, and most recently one was discovered with a financial advisor who was kind of like a Bernie Madoff, where he had a Ponzi scheme, taking people's investment money and having them write the check to him. That's a sure sign that something's not right, rather than to Schwab or to Fidelity or to the investment company. And he was, of course, going off with the money rather than investing it. The same thing had happened a while back with federal employees, and believe it or not, it was law enforcement employees who were led to believe that they could get a guaranteed 8 to 10% return by investing with the person who came into their agencies to provide retirement training. And unfortunately, that gentleman committed suicide when he found out that he had been discovered. So they're few and far between, just like the headline news with Bernie Madoff and what was going on there. But it is a good sign that we need to be aware and need to be cautious when we hire someone and do the proper due diligence to check out their background and to make sure they have their registered investment advisor status or a certified financial planner and they haven't had any sanctions against them.
How can you check someone's background and qualifications? Are there authorized sources of this kind of information? Or conversely, can you find out if someone's no good?
Yeah, you can find out a lot about a financial advisor's background by checking with the Securities and Exchange Commission. They've actually set up a website for employees and for others, anyone actually, to do that, to research before you invest. There's a free investment professional background check available, so you can check out your investment professional. And if they're above board, they'll be happy for you to do that. And there's also a way to even research the investments that you're being led to invest in to make sure they're legitimate, to make sure of what their performance is and what they're actually being invested in. So there are definitely ways to go around and make sure of what you're getting, just the same way as you might do if you hired or if you went to work with a physician or a medical professional. You want to make sure you're getting someone who's looking out for your best interest.
And many financial advisors are associated with large financial institutions like Linsco, Private Ledger, that type of outfit, as
Absolutely.
Almost franchises. So you could check with those headquarters to find out also.
That's right. Yeah, you want to work with someone who does have a good background. And I think another thing that's important is someone who works with people like you. If you're a federal employee, if you have a large amount to invest or a mediocre amount to invest, you want to work with someone who has clients of that nature so that they're more familiar and more willing to work with you as well. So I think, you know, if you're going to hire someone who only has people with $10 million or more, they may not have the time to deal with you as much as someone who is willing to work with someone with a lesser amount.
And also, if they're working with really wealthy people, they might charge you on a percentage basis a lot more money.
Well, yeah. There's different ways that financial advisors charge for their services. And that's a question you want to ask when you're doing your background or interview with that person. Because most financial planners would be happy to sit down with you for a free consultation to make sure it's a good fit for them and for you.
We're speaking with Tammy Flanagan, a retirement expert, also senior benefits director at the National Institute of Transition Planning. And I want to switch gears for a moment and talk about some of the pay and benefit provisions that are bouncing around Congress right now, bouncing around the Trump administration's 2018 budget proposal. Principally, they're proposing a steady increase in the amount that employees contribute to their retirement. over a number of years, taking it up to 6%. If it went
that's
up
right.
to 6%.
That's for the FERS employees. Uh-huh.
For FERS employees, which is, I guess, most employees at this point.
About 95% of the government payroll.
Yeah. So what's the implication of that in terms of a strategy you might want to employ?
Well, the first thing I'll say is a proposal. So I wouldn't do anything too drastic at this point. Just follow the news and follow how that's going to move through Congress over the summer. And Congress does have a lot of work to do besides this with the tax reform and health care reform. So hopefully they won't get to making these changes. We're all hopeful this year. But if they do, what that means to a FERS employee is that gradually over the next 10 years, their retirement contribution will increase from 0.8% to 6% over that period of time, which means the employee is going to shoulder 50% of the cost of their own pension. And that's in addition to having to save money out of your paycheck for the thrift savings plan and also to pay the Social Security taxes. So that's a lot of mandatory withholding just in order to retire, let alone insurance and other taxes that you have to pay.
But how does that compare to what, say, people, the few people that still have defined pension plans in the private sector have to put aside?
Well, in many cases, private sector pension plans are fully funded by the employer rather than the employee. But like you said, Tom, very few employees in the private sector have that pension benefit anymore. And I wouldn't be surprised that at some point in the future, that could be the same note for FERS employees, that pension benefit could disappear as it follows the way of private industry. But for right now, that basic pension isn't enough to retire on, even when you add it to Social Security. So it's very important for federal employees to be able to save money in the thrift savings plan to supplement those pension benefits that are not complete pensions by themselves.
I guess the question then would become at some point in the future, if you could say, I don't know, opt out of the federal pension, but have the discipline to take 6% of your pay and invest it elsewhere, in the long run, you might do a lot better.
Yeah, I would say at a minimum 6%. I think if you don't have a pension benefit, your savings rate should probably run in the neighborhood of 10 to 15%. Which is what a lot of folks in the private sector find themselves needing to do in order to be able to retire at a relatively young age.
Ultimately, the government is not going to be way out of sync with what the economy as a whole is doing then in that case.
Yeah, I think we're seeing the writing on the wall. I think the biggest concern for a lot of current federal employees is that those who are nearing retirement, they may be within 5 years or less of their actual retirement plan, if things change, not only the change in the contribution rate, but the change in the benefit calculation that's being proposed, the change in the cost of living adjustment, that can derail someone's plans who might have been considering retirement just in the next few years to now have to think about delaying that. And add that to the fact that so many agencies now are offering early retirements due to the budget cuts, it causes a great dilemma for some employees.
Tammy Flanagan is Senior Benefits Director at the National Institute of Transition Planning. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Find a link to more information and to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.